From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Mark Report. It's the 17th day of July, 2009. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzolo of Risk Management Commodities Incorporated. He's in Lafayette, Indiana. In agricultural news, taking a single word out of the definition of waters of the United States changes the whole meaning. Cattle producers are all for turning the ethanol industry out on its own, and E15 is on the docket. More on these and other news stories shortly. And then we'll hear how a landmark paper on IPM was authored 50 years ago and how its principles remain valid today and may very well offer a stern warning for row crop producers. I'll have more on that as we finish out this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report. The Closing Market Report is a production of public radio from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois.
This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Bates Commodities in Normal. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
In Chicago on this Friday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. The nearby September wheat at 541¾, 8.5 cents higher. December at 568, up 8.5. And the March contract, $5.86¼, up 8¾. From Kansas City, the nearby September at 566½, up 7 cents on the afternoon. Kansas City, or rather corn in Chicago, 322¼, up 5.5 cents. December at 331½, up 6¼. And the March contract at 345¼, up 6 cents. And the May futures in the corn pit, 354¾, up 6. July contract, 6½ higher at 364¼. From the soy complex, nearby beans, August contract, $10.09, up 33½. September at 948½, up 33½. And November beans at 923½, up 33½. January futures, 931¼, finished 33¼ higher in the March at 936, up 31½. August bean meal futures, 317.50, up 8.50. The August oil at 34.82, up 102 on the afternoon. August live cattle futures up 77½ cents at 86.37½. The October at 91.95, up 52½. And the August feeders at 104.60, up 70 cents. September feeder cattle at 104.72½, up 65 cents. August lean hog futures today, 64.67½, down 55 cents. The October futures at $60.55 a hundredweight, up 7½ cents. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It's a production of Illinois Public Media from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Nearby crude oil futures, August contract, $63.56, a settlement price up $1.54. August ethanol at $1.53¼, up 2¼, and the natural gas at $3.67¾, a half a cent higher. RBOB gasoline at $1.76¾, up 5¾, and the heating oil, that's diesel fuel, at $1.64¼, now 4¼ cents higher. Propane futures, 74¼ cents, just about unchanged. And the gold at $937.20 an ounce, up $2.10. The Dow at 87.36 is 25 points higher. The dollar at 79.34 is up 0.12. And the CRB at 245.05 is up 11.54 on the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast for the two-state region looks like, as prepared by our own Mike Sola. He says tonight in northern and central sections, partly to mostly cloudy, a few widely scattered showers or sprinkles in the south, clear to partly cloudy. Lows will be between 50 and 56. And then tomorrow in the north, mostly cloudy sky, scattered showers in central and southern sections, partly sunny. A few showers are possible during the afternoon. Highs will range from 68 in the north to 78 in the far southern part of Illinois. The extended forecast says unseasonably cool temperatures will persist through the weekend before a moderate rebound for the middle of next week. The cool temps will cause slower than normal crop development while providing, of course, good conditions for corn pollination. Precip will tend to be below average across the entire two-state area for the next 10 days to 2 weeks. More on the agricultural weather at the bottom of the hour when we talk with the folks at the Midwestern Regional Climate Center.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Agricultural programs are made possible by First Midwest Bank, serving Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Kathy Ferguson in Morris at 815-941-3758. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
Hey, have you tried our podcast yet? I know somebody who has. Rick Green has, out of Columbia, Missouri. He's with the Missouri Farmers Association. It's a great deal like GrowMark here in the state of Illinois. Thank you much, Rick, for listening and for, if you're not yet, being a member to our radio stations and Illinois Public Media. You can always pledge online at willpledge.org, hit willag.org, and you can find all of those great podcast and ag programming, including our Friday afternoon analyst. His name is Mike Zuzulo and is with Risk Management Commodities Incorporated out of Lafayette, Indiana. Good afternoon to you, Mike.
Hello there, Todd. I'm doing well. How about you?
I am doing very well. It's nice to see some green on the screen today.
You know, I have to say, maybe since it's fair time, county fair time for some of the guys out there, maybe they can afford an extra elephant ear because we actually had a higher close for the week in soybeans, and we had over a 22-cent higher close in the wheat. So it was a nice way to go home, wasn't it?
Oh, that was a really magnificent way to go home. You know, Dave Dickey is off this week, and so I didn't have those numbers in front of me. I didn't realize that we had finished the week higher in the soybeans. That's a very nice little cap to the week, although it's been an ugly week there otherwise.
It's been tough. And you know, we had a yo-yo price action in the last half of this week. We ended yesterday down hard in the soy on news that China and weather were bearish. Today we ended higher in soy on news that China and weather. And so it's been really a yo-yo effect. I think probably the best thing that came out of this week was not just the fact that wheat did show some leadership, but also we kind of have some lines in the sand now for bean producers that they can watch now before having to make some additional 09 hedges. And one of those lines was a big, big line at the 200-week moving average for the November bean contract, right around that 887 level, so 885 if you have to mentally keep track of it. That's a key number now for November. August beans also had been toggling around that 200-day moving average around 988, and we were able to get some air underneath us from that and get some distance from that, being able to close back up above $10. So on a weekly basis, lead month and new crop November look really, really healthy, a lot healthier than they did, like you said, on Monday or Tuesday.
And then tell me about the gains in the wheat market, too, please.
Well, the wheat is more fund-related from what we're picking up, Todd, that the commodity trading funds, which are very, very short at this time, are starting to unwind their short positions. We also have seen the dollar give back a lot of its gains from last week, and since midweek hasn't really done much. It's been hanging around that 79.50 level in September, but that and the stock market strength and the crude oil being able to manage to stay above $60 this week, I suspect that's probably the main drivers for why the wheat has been able to recover and be able to extend its gains, even when the corn and beans were going down. So maybe we're on one of those tracks where, as one of the branches pointed out, we're looking at maybe 20 to 30 days from where we get a high or a low in wheat, and then we can turn the corn and beans 20 to 30 days from that time period. So hopefully we'll see continuation of this next week.
Anything interesting in the weekly charts because of expiration in corn, soybeans, or wheat?
Didn't see anything. I was really looking more at the moving averages. I think what we did see in September corn maybe that needs to be noted is we had a major low from last week, and after the report of that 318.5 level, we took that out yesterday, but we were able to get back up above that on today's close so that the weekly chart looks very, very healthy compared to what it could have if we would have closed below that. So probably lead month corn would be the biggie. I think maybe the best thing to talk about here over the weekend in terms of a marketing idea is we've had a very big pop in basis for 08 corn because the pipeline's been running thin because farmers haven't sold during this downdraft. Basis has shot up in a lot of areas. We're suggesting to our clients to take a look at locking in the rest of their 08 basis corn, because if the futures do have further upside next week on be it crop conditions, be it weather, be it whatever, that may cause the basis to widen out and weaken again if the futures turns higher.
Can you go back through what you saw on the weekly charts on the corn? I was popping that chart up, and I didn't hear exactly what it was. I want to take a look at it again, please.
Yeah, sure. September daily chart is what I'm looking at.
September daily.
Yeah, the September daily chart. We had a low from last week of 318.5, and that was a pretty big low because that was, you know, on the 10th, right there during the report time period.
Right.
We went through that yesterday. We were able to regain that low back today on a weekly close.
Okay, and then I guess that was my question because I was looking at the weekly chart on the continuation, and it's a big outside week, but it's outside down.
Yes.
So that wasn't very pretty. And then if you take a look at the lead option wheat or the continuous wheat on the daily chart, there's a nice little gap there. So that's kind of an interesting thing. It's not up there, of course, in the weekly, but it does show a nice little uptrend there. I suppose some of that gives you heart that we may find a bottom here pretty soon in all these markets.
I kind of feel like the wheat and the natural gas have been very similar in their trading price action, and especially technicals, and they're both looking much, much better. We just need to get a little bit higher, like for the September wheat, for instance, if we could get a close above 565, 570 level, I think you could say, okay, we've got a pretty solid bottom in place. I think you could say that for the natural gas. On a weekly chart, you've got a double bottom in place now after going down very hard yesterday, or day before yesterday. We came roaring back today, and that's the kind of stuff you want to see if you've exhausted the sellers. You know, we went down on light volume, it seemed like, in both complexes. Now we're coming back up on decent volume and really making some gains. I think the big number next week will be, or the big thing next week will be the weather, Todd. We've got potential, like you just said before we came in on the air, potential record lows in the Midwest. But meanwhile, out in the Dakotas, South Dakota especially, may break 100 out there by the end of the next week. So I think maybe that perfect growing crop condition that we've been talking about on Commodity Week and the news wires have been writing about so much this week, maybe the trade will back off that a little bit if we have these weather extremes play out.
Anything else to add before I let you go for the afternoon?
That'll do it. We'll just watch that good to excellent and see if we lose 70% on the corn on Monday afternoon.
And we'll find out on Monday. Thanks much.
Thanks, Todd. Have a good weekend.
Hey, you too. That is Mike Zuzlow. He's with Risk Management Commodities Incorporated out of Lafayette, Indiana. Joins us here on the Closing Mark Report each and every Friday afternoon. If you'd like to listen to him again, you can do that on our website at willag.org. Just scroll down to the page and hit the Closing Mark Report or the Ag Futures if you'd like underneath of that. Or you can dial this number, 217-333-3434. We call it our mobile analyst portal. We take the pre-opening, or rather the opening market report and the closing market report, about 5 minutes of the analysis, some of the weather, and a little bit of the numbers from there, and we post that all to our website, too, at 21—actually, post it all to the phone number, 217-333-3434.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
You're listening to the Closing Mark Report from Illinois Public Media. In today's agricultural news, an ethanol trade group is giving a big thumbs down to a new effort on Capitol Hill to end federal support for the corn-based fuel. The Affordable Food and Fuel for America Act, introduced in the House by New York Democrat Joseph Crowley and California Republican Mary Bono Mack, would phase out government support for corn ethanol over 5 years and encourage the commercial development of second-generation biofuels. Growth Energy CEO Tom Baez says the bill relies on false premises and myths.
Corn prices are down over 50% of what they were a year ago. And if food prices aren't coming down, someone needs to ask the people who are buying the corn and turning it into products why that's not happening. It's not the production of ethanol. And this year, we're having second highest crop on record. And we have a mountain of corn starting to build up, and we have plenty of animal feed at reasonable prices for the livestock industry.
The National Cattlemen's Beef Association supports the legislation, calling its passage critical to leveling the playing field for corn supplies. In a statement, NCBA President Gary Voigt says cattle feeders have lost some $5.2 billion in the last 18 months, in part due to the nation's ethanol policies. On the subject of the NCBA and cattle producers, they're facing a lot of challenges. Two of them stand out to Gary Voigt. When it comes to demand, he says the economy is having an impact, softening demand for beef. Of course, he notes there's not much NCBA can do about the global economy, but NCBA can work to address the other challenges, he says.
We are seeing unprecedented regulatory and legislative pressure from this administration to restrict the way we do business, restrict our use of our own property.
One of those regulatory challenges is the Clean Water Act. Voigt says an effort by the government to keep water clean may sound like a great idea to the average American, but he says the measure would strip the word navigable from the definition of waters of the United States. Voigt says navigable is a very important term that should not be removed.
Taking that one word out will be the largest land grab by the government of all our property rights. The ditch in front of our house, an occasional puddle, farm ponds, all would become under federal jurisdiction. And in Michigan, for example, the water underneath my farm is now ruled property of the state. I've got to get permission to use the water underneath my property to put down a well. And so it's a major intrusion into our business and one that has to be stopped.
The American Farm Bureau Federation agrees. President Bob Stallman has warned all private property owners that the Clean Water Restoration Act leaves no water unregulated and could even impact standing rainwater in a dry area. And finally today, the public comment period on moving to E15 ends Monday, and ethanol industry leaders hoping for a quick and positive decision by EPA. Stuart Doan of the National Association of Farm Broadcasting reports.
The Environmental Protection Agency has until December to act on the ethanol industry's request for an increase in the amount of ethanol that can be blended into gasoline to 15% from the current 10% limit. While EPA could approve a 12% or 13% blend, Growth Energy CEO Tom Bias declined to predict what the agency
will or won't do, except I would just hope that they follow the Clean Air Act requirements. I think if they do, we have submitted the science and the data according to the law that would prove that they should go to E15.
Bias told reporters a 15% blend would require nearly 7 billion more gallons of the corn-based fuel and said quick and positive action by EPA would provide a morale boost for the financially stressed ethanol industry.
It would psychologically send a signal to all those folks who have put on hold plans for the development of the next generation to start dusting them off and looking to move forward.
Bias acknowledged that an EPA decision to raise the blend cap would almost certainly be challenged in court. I'm Stuart Doan reporting.
And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
The closing market report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at agrigold.com or at 800-262-7333.
Well, there are a couple of private property rights issues in those news stories, and it just reminds me of a conversation I had with a friend of mine. A couple of years back, we were talking about his adventures overseas. He helped to try to privatize lands in some of the former Soviet Union. He told me at that time, it's easy to overthrow a king and his land. It's very hard to overthrow a people and their land. I'll add that private property is the backbone of democracy. Just something to think about. Now, up next, you know, 50 years ago, a landmark paper, The Integrated Control Concept, was published by the California Agricultural Experiment Station. The authors there were entomologists at the U of C's Riverside and Berkeley campuses. It laid out the consequences of over-reliance on a single form of pest control, and the foundation for what we know today as IPM, or Integrated Pest Management.
Support comes from the Westchester Group in Champaign, an agricultural asset management firm specializing in the acquisition, management, and disposition of agricultural investments for institutional, corporate, and individual clients. Information at 800-607-6888 or at westchester-group.com.
After World War II, the widespread introduction of chlorinated hydrocarbon insecticides, things like DDT, were hailed for insect control. The initial results were so spectacular, some entomologists speculated key insect pests could be eradicated completely. Yet the promise of these miraculous products was short-lived, and it came with unwanted consequences, says University of Illinois Extension entomologist Mike Gray.
And some of these unwanted consequences were, you know, higher levels of pesticide residue showing up on fruits and vegetables than were healthy. Concentration of some of these insecticides in the food chain. There were concerns about exposure of farm workers to these chlorinated hydrocarbons. So these entomologists came together and crafted this landmark paper, basically the integrated control concept.
So in recognition that these problems were significant and likely to worsen due to increasingly irrational approaches to insect control, the University of California entomologists began to describe concepts that Mike Gray says are just as important and relevant today for row crop production as they were 50 years ago.
Things like the economic threshold, economic entry level, the idea that we need to integrate many different tactics as we manage pests, whether they be weeds, insects, or diseases. And the importance of integration primarily because you know, there are important environmental benefits, important human health and safety benefits, as well as you know, the idea that if we integrate tactics, we can delay or prevent the onset of resistance to these products.
And therein lies the rub, some 50 years after IPM was introduced. Most cornfields across the nation are planted with seeds that have been treated with an insecticide, a seed treatment known as a neonicotinoid. It's a disturbing trend, and one entomologist at the University of Illinois have warned could come with unwanted consequences.
Well, as we look at IPM, integrated pest management, in the commercial corn and soybean production system of the U.S., we see, in my opinion, some disturbing trends. For instance, we know that BT seed is treated with the neonicotinoid insecticides, and so we are every year exposing many below-ground insect pests to neonicotinoid insecticides, and one has to simply wonder how long will it be before resistance begins to build up in some of these secondary insect populations.
Resistant insects like wireworms and white grubs. This warning is not to take away from the remarkable success story of BT seed corn. It's corn modified to resist specified insect pests. Rather, it is targeted at overuse of that technology and, more importantly, of the insecticidal seed treatments that come along with it. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason. Listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. In just about 2 minutes, we'll take a complete look at the agricultural weather forecast with Steve Hilberg. He's the director of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center.
Support for WILL comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks by developing dynamic strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is at stuart-peterson.com. Support comes from the Westchester Group in Champaign, an agricultural asset management firm specializing in the acquisition, management, and disposition of agricultural investments for institutional, corporate, and individual clients. Information at 800-607-6888 or at westchester-group.com.
I'm Todd Gleason. You're listening to the Closing Mark Report from Illinois Public Media. On the line with us to take a look at what's been happening in the world of agricultural weather today is Steve Hilberg. He's the director of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center at the Illinois State Water Survey. It belongs to NOAA, the National Oceanic. I can't come up with the correct title. What does NOAA stand for, Steve?
The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration.
I got close, and it just would not roll off my tongue. What will roll off my tongue is that it's going to be cold, or at least seem cold anyway, in the next few days.
Well, actually, it won't just seem that way. It'll be, well, cold's all relative, of course. We get 70 degrees in the middle of winter, and it's a heat wave. But this time of year, we're not used to seeing it quite this cool. Temperatures this so far this July have been running well below normal. It's pretty much nailed the outlook for the month that was issued by Climate Prediction Center back in June. Temperatures across Illinois right now for the month range from about 3 to 6 degrees below normal, and it's not going to get any better over the weekend in terms of trying to warm up. In fact, over the next couple of days, we may see a lot of record low maximum temperatures for these next 3 days in July across much of the Midwest as this cool air stays over us here. So we are running below normal. It looks like it's going to stay that way probably for the rest of the month.
Who gets to be the coldest?
Well, it would be obviously northern sections of the Midwest and northern Illinois. That's where temperatures are currently running about 5 degrees below normal, and probably highs tomorrow won't get much out of the 60s, depending on how much cloud cover there is. But in far northern Minnesota for this month so far, they're running about 10 degrees below normal. So we're seeing a huge range, and then, of course, that affects our growing degree days. And about the only place growing degree days are near to above normal, basically south of I-44, I-64 in Missouri and Illinois, more or less along the Ohio River. So everything north of that is gradually running below normal, from just a few below normal to well below normal, of course, across Minnesota, Wisconsin, and Michigan.
Any one culprit we can blame the cold weather on?
No particular phenomena, no El Nino, La Nina, or anything like that at this point. Just the general circulation pattern this month has set up again, very, very spring-like, very winter-like in a way, with a large low-pressure system over Canada. And that keeps us in northwesterly flow. And, of course, the alternative is if we're not getting the cold, we'd be on the other side of the coin, because usually where it's cold, some places pretty hot, and that's been out in the west and high plains where they've had some pretty hot weather out there.
Tell me about the daytime highs and how long we'll have the cool temperatures for daytime highs.
Well, we'll probably stay, at near record levels here probably through the weekend, and then we'll see a little bit of a warm-up next week, gradually getting back into the around 80, low 80s. And normally at this time of year, our high temperature averages run from about the low 80s in northern Illinois to the upper 80s in far southern Illinois, and can just sort of gauge yourself in between. So we're going to be running below normal, but it will be warming up a bit. But then it looks like another reinforcing shot maybe middle of next week would bring us some showers and maybe some cooler weather.
Well, something we can talk about, but doesn't sound like it's something that we have to worry about.
No, at least we're not stressing out the crops. They're not, of course, we're not getting development like we probably want, but we're not getting the hot, dry weather that would otherwise adversely affect the corn and soybeans.
Steve, thanks so much.
All right.
Steve Hilberg is the director of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center at the Illinois State Water Survey. It belongs to NOAA. You've been listening to the Closing Mark Report from Illinois Public Media. I'm Todd Gleason. You have a very good afternoon.